The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants at the Institute of Child Nutrition, and I will be your host. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of iBites here at the Institute of Child Nutrition. We have mentioned a couple of episodes ago when Dr. Alicia Hall Campbell, our Executive Director, joined us that we were premiering a Leadership in Child Nutrition episode series. And today we have a very special guest with us, a very well-known name in the world of child nutrition, Ms. Julia Bauscher. Julia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We are super excited. You are our second leadership guru in this series who's going to be chatting with us a little bit about child nutrition and your experience in the leadership field. And so before we get any further, just tell us a little bit about your current role and what brought you to where you are today.
Great. So I am currently the Director of School and Community Nutrition Services for Jefferson County Public Schools in Louisville, Kentucky. We're a large urban district with 100,000 students and 147 locations. I actually began my school food service career in 1994. At the time, I had been in food service sales for the previous 12 years, had two small children, called on Jefferson County Public Schools, and had the opportunity to meet the person whose position I would eventually get as my first step in school food service. That position was coordinator of food procurement. So I began that role in 1994 and did that for 5 years. And then I became the first manager of our central kitchen and warehouse, which opened in January of 2000. I had that role for 10 years, managing food production for 30 products in the cook chill department, the bakery and packaging and assembly at the Nutrition Service Center. And 10 years ago, this coming August, I became the director of the program, succeeded a great mentor, Cheryl Sturgeon, in this role.
Well, you have a varied experience, I think, which is one of the things that make you such an expert in the field is because you have experienced so many different levels in child nutrition. Did you ever, when you first started in child nutrition, did you ever think you would be the expert you are today?
No, I did not. I was actually pre-med at the University of Kentucky until I discovered or realized that I didn't like to fight a blood. It made me sort of faint, and I quickly switched gears and got into what I considered a related field, a very important field, and that's dietetics. I also had the opportunity to work at the University of Kentucky Food Services as a student supervisor. I learned a lot from a great mentor there, and so I became very interested in food service management. Shortly after I completed my coursework at the University of Kentucky in institution management, I went into sales, in school food service sales. So again, for 13 years, I worked for the likes of the Campbell Soup Company and RJR Nabisco at the time, selling, food service products to hospitals, nursing homes, and of course, school districts, which is again how I got the opportunity to, be employed in the school food service business. I think one of the most ironic things is, and it didn't dawn on me until I had actually been in a school food service role for a few years, that my mother was actually a school food service manager at the elementary school that I attended, but after I had graduated from that elementary school and was in high school and college, and of course, my focus was elsewhere besides
Absolutely.
What my mother was doing. So in some way, I've sort of followed her tracks into school food service, and I always say it's the best place in the world to work.
Well, you know, Galen McDonald and I chatted in a previous episode, and you mentioned something that she and I talked a lot about, which was a mentor. And she recognized the value of mentors at pretty much every level of her career. Do you kind of see that same value in having a mentor, regardless of where you are in your career?
Absolutely. I don't think that any of us would get to where we are without those very special people that care about us and that want to teach us what they do and encourage us to go after bigger and better things. I mentioned Margaret McIntyre, who was the manager at the dining hall at the University of Kentucky where I was employed. She was amazing. When I came to work at Jefferson County Public Schools, Cheryl Sturgeon, who was the director, became a great mentor, really took me under her wing, showed me everything there was to know about school food service, despite the fact that my responsibility was for food procurement and menu planning. But she gave me the opportunity to learn about all areas of school food service management, which prepared me to step into her shoes when she retired in 2009. And I have to acknowledge the many mentors that I've had during my leadership time with the School Nutrition Association, particularly Jamie Thornton, who is a retired school food service director here in Kentucky and a former deputy secretary at the USDA. She took me under her wing as well, taught me about school nutrition as well as about professional leadership in an association like the School Nutrition Association. And so I'm deeply indebted to her and many of the leaders that I have had the privilege to serve with as I've worked my way up on the board of directors with the School Nutrition Association, including SNA's Director of the Year, Becky DeMoco-Bays, that was just announced. So I cannot overstate the importance of having people in your life that you can learn from and, again, that care about you and want you to reach higher and higher.
I agree. I believe that we are a culmination of every experience that you're involved in and every interaction with people or every relationship you're involved with. So I don't know that even in a leadership position I've ever really put that together with the importance of a mentor. There's always been people that I looked up to or I valued their opinion or I watched the way they did things. But now, having had these conversations about leadership with Dr. Hall Campbell and with yourself and with Gay Lynn, you really start to identify the value of a mentor and having somebody there who you can talk to and listen to and ask how they solve problems and how did they handle certain issues.
Absolutely. And I think it's just as important that as a leader, we mentor others that are on our team and that we work with on a daily basis. You know, I won't be around in Jefferson County Public Schools forever. I have the most amazing school food service team in the country, and I want to make sure that each of them is prepared to move into higher positions and that many of them will, you know, be prepared to possibly apply for my position when I retire. I think that's very important. And not only does it help them, but it improves your program. The more they have the opportunity to learn, to participate in professional development, to visit peer districts, the better your program is. And the better your program is, the more our students benefit.
I agree wholeheartedly. You picked on a word that I really like, empower. It empowers you as a leader if you empower those around you to be successful. I always tell my staff, I've always said, if I can be gone and you can be successful and the job keeps rolling and the work keeps getting done without me being there, then I've been a success because I've empowered them to be successful and good at what they do.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to tell my boss, but honestly, if I didn't come in again, mm-hmm. this program would operate very efficiently, very effectively, and we would continue to provide a great program to our students.
Agreed. That is so key, and I think so many. I know as a young leader, that was kind of difficult to grasp, because you think being in a leadership position a lot of times that you want people to rely on you and to that you're the one that has all the answers. But it really is about that empowerment and giving them the skills and the training that they need to be a success.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What other leadership skills, Julia, do you think are difficult for people who are new in the field or new in leadership to kind of pick up? Maybe they don't see the value in those skills, or maybe it's just a hard skill that's difficult to learn.
I think one of the most difficult things that you have to deal with when you become a school food service leader is just managing the human resources. I think that's one of the most difficult part of the job. And it can be very intimidating. It can be very difficult. You know, ideally, we all work with people who think the way we do, who are responsible and do their work, but that's not always the case. And there are sometimes difficult human resource issues you have to deal with. And I think that is one of the most challenging things when it comes to managing a school food service program or a school cafeteria or any work site. So
I agree.
That is something that I would identify as very difficult.
That's an area even that we see here at the Institute. We get tons of requests. That's an official number, by the way, tons is. We get tons of requests for resources on how to handle HR issues or how to do HR training or how to get their employees better trained in customer service. So it is that human component that I don't know that we're always prepared for when you go into a leadership position.
I agree. And I think it's also one area where a leader is most likely or more likely to make a mistake and maybe handle a situation in the wrong way. But thinking along the lines that we all learn more when we fail than sometimes when we're successful, it can be very difficult to tackle that and manage that. But the more you do it, the more proficient you will be at it, and the better your team and program will be.
When we're learning something new, we fail a lot. I know I did. I'll speak for myself. I failed a lot. Still do. But I always think that I learned something from it and I'm able to move on. Can you identify any time where maybe something didn't go the way you exactly had planned it, or you weren't as successful the first time, how you kind of bounced back from it and what you learned from that?
That's very difficult for me to think of a specific incident. I am sure I have failed many times, and I'm sure that if my staff were asked that question, they would probably have a list of times when they thought I could have done something better. I guess, and this isn't really someone place where I failed, but a time when I was afraid to step up and do something that I was being challenged to do. I mentioned that I began my school food service career as the coordinator of food procurement. And I, 5 years into this job, I had, three small children, and I had just been elected vice president of the Kentucky School Nutrition Association. We needed a manager for the central kitchen and warehouse, and I did not intend to apply for that position. And someone else who works in the district came into my office and said, "We really need you to step up. You can do this." And I said, "I don't think I can handle it. I've got small children. I've just made a big commitment to the Kentucky School Nutrition Association. It's not my time." Right. And they pushed me, and I applied, and I received the job. It, you know, everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I managed everything wonderfully. I had difficult days, but I was invigorated by the new challenges of that position. And of course, 10 years of doing that allowed me to learn even more about managing effective school nutrition programs, so that when the director retired, I was better prepared to assume that position.
That is an excellent example, and it actually goes right along with what Gaylin and I were talking about last month, in that she said there have been so many times in her life where somebody encouraged her to step out and try something new, and she was very trepidatious about doing that. But she has learned that whether she is the leader that's making the suggestion to somebody else to step out, or it is a leader coming to her saying, hey, you need to give this a try, that you need to listen to those people. And when somebody sees something in you that maybe you don't see in yourself, that we need to pause a minute and say, okay, maybe they see something I don't, maybe they know something I don't. So I think that is a great example for taking what may not be a failure, but something where you just were not comfortable, you didn't think it was your wheelhouse, but somebody saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself, and you were a success.
Yes, and I do that today with my own staff members. I encourage them to apply for other positions, and you know, we don't always succeed when we do that, and I'll be honest, some of the people I've encouraged haven't succeeded in getting the positions that they applied for, but they grew through that process. They learned more about interviews and more about the types of things that are important in that job. So it's always worthwhile, and this is not directly related to position in school food service, but, you know, I was selected to serve on the nutrition committee for the School Nutrition Association, and then served 4 years there, served 2 years as nutrition committee chair, and threw my name in the hat to become the vice president of the School Nutrition Association, and I lost that election. I was fairly confident that I would win, and I did not. And many people give up after a loss. And, you know, a year later, threw my name back in the hat to run for vice president and became vice president of the association. So I always encourage people, you may not get what you want the first time, but don't give up. And again, to your point of, you know, identifying the talent and the potential for people, and then encouraging them to develop that potential and, again, reach higher.
You're exactly right. I'll give you a personal example. Before I came to the Institute, I'm coming up on my sixth year in July. Before I was here, I worked in a school district, and my husband had already accepted a position here in Oxford, so I was commuting every day. So I knew and my girls are now teenagers, so at the time they were upper elementary. And for a mom, being an hour and a half away from your kids, that's tough. So I knew it was time to look for a job closer. I hadn't interviewed in close to 10 years. And the first two or three jobs I interviewed for, Julia, I didn't get. And I was down in the dumps thinking, well, what am I going to do? But what I realized was through each of those interviews, and I think I ended up interviewing for about three or four jobs before I got this interview, was that each of those interviews really prepared me to be a better interviewer when this job came available.
Yes. And in the majority of instances, you can't imagine yourself being anyplace else.
Exactly.
You know? So it's kind of like, well, thank goodness that didn't work out.
Right.
Because now I'm where I really feel like I want to be.
You're exactly right. You know, leaders, from the very beginning, whether it be the successes or the failures, we have to develop our, what I call our leadership toolbox of how we handle things, your leadership skills. Are there specific skills that you think are key for new leaders or even experienced leaders to really focus on developing, the ones that don't just come naturally?
Right. So I think focusing on improving or developing your communication skills is critical.
Absolutely.
So many things come down to communication or lack thereof. And that's being able to communicate in a number of effective ways, but most importantly, face-to-face or one-on-one. I think that is extremely important. I also think that to be a leader, it's very important that you focus on the process of strategic planning and how that works. And again, strategic planning with a team, mm-hmm. so that every person on the team has the opportunity to share their vision, provide their input into what the department's priorities should be, what the program's goals should be. And then in the end, after you've created a plan, you've got team members that buy into that plan because they were part of the process. And I think that's very important. And not just strategic planning, but just in sometimes the regular operation of the program, it's important to listen to people and allow them to share their thoughts and ideas about how something might be better or something that we should try. And again, that'll just make your program better and stronger and, you know, more effective for your students.
Do you think that there are any specific obstacles that most leaders are unaware of that prevent them from moving forward? Communication, I think, is key. I think it's tough when you move from being in a what I would consider subordinate position into one that is a leadership position where you're the one making the decisions. We often stumble with communication, so that's an obvious stumbling block. But what are some of those other obstacles that prevent leaders from being as successful as they could be?
That I think is probably the key one. And what I often see, at the school level or at our central kitchen and warehouse is you've got a very talented employee that's, been a nutrition assistant and then they're promoted into a manager's position and, you know, they've got close ties or friendships with those people, but now all of a sudden,
right,
they're the person that has to set the direction and make sure that, you know, the processes and procedures are followed, and the people that they used to work with on the same level don't always take too kindly from receiving instructions from someone that mm-hmm. used to be one of them. And so I think that that is difficult and causes a lot of people to stumble. That's one example I can think of.
But, you know, that is such a hard lesson to learn when you, and I've had the, I guess you would say, opportunity to work alongside with somebody, and then either they became one of my supervisors or I became one of their supervisors. And I will say not in every position has that turned out to be a positive relationship, because that is really a difficult thing to learn. Do you think other than just the experience, is there any other way that we could better prepare people for that? Because that is so hard.
It is. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a better way that we prepare people for that. I do know one of the things that we're working on in our department to strengthen or to make more viable is kind of a management training program
mm-hmm.
so that you actually have the opportunity to talk about some of these things, learn more about what the responsibilities are when you become a manager or a leader in the program, so that will help people be more prepared for the transition that's going to occur and the changes in the relationships that will occur if they advance.
You know, I just don't think you can discount the value of those real life situations. You just,
Definitely.
You learn so much, and people are so different, whether it be because of where you're located or the position you're in or your stage of life or whatever it is. We actually have a course here at ICN called Managing Personalities and Conflict. And one of the pieces that we talk about in it is the generational differences. And we have, on my staff alone, I have probably three different generations of people represented. And it's so funny to see, maybe interesting instead of funny, to see how I'm more of a email communicator because I like to have it written down so I can go back and say, now on day X, we said we were going to do. But I have some older staff members who prefer that face-to-face. And then I have some newer staff members who would just rather me shoot them a text. And it's...
And there's a proliferation of those courses about, you know, managing various generations. I'm a baby boomer myself, so probably one of those older people that, you know, prefers a face-to-face.
Right.
Although I do very well with email, but, you know, understanding or appreciating the fact that other generations think differently and have different preferences and priorities. And it's important that you respect that and that you, you know, establish a relationship that is, you know, win-win for whatever the generations are.
I don't think we put enough emphasis, regardless of what leadership position we're in, on that. That it all goes back to that communication piece you were talking about. That's so very important. Is there any daily habits that you have incorporated into your, whether it be morning ritual or daily ritual? For me, it's my morning cup of coffee when I sit down and I plan out my day. I look at my calendar for the day. I have my planner sitting next to me, and I write down what the things are that I know I'm going to hit before I allow my day to start happening to me. Is there any habits that you have like that that you feel have made you be a success?
I am a perpetual list maker. Similar to your approach or strategy, I like to, the afternoon before I go home, think about what is my priority going to be in the morning? What does my day look like? Have I got everything that I will need? For example, for the meetings that I have to attend, have I got information prepared for my boss if he's asked for something? So I do that. I can tell you that this is a habit that I have developed or improved significantly over the last couple of years, and that's that wake up and I don't get out of bed until I do some reflection, some meditation, some prayer, just to kind of set the stage for the day, and relax. And that makes me a much better person to be around, a much more patient person. The things that, you know, come at you that you don't expect don't upset me or affect me much as they might have in the past. So I can't start my day without that. I don't get out of bed until I sit up and I have the opportunity just to appreciate the morning, the birds, you know, and spend some quiet time.
I think each person needs that time to kind of gather themselves so that they can, I call it acting on the world versus letting the world act on you.
That's a perfect analogy.
You being in control of your day versus your day being in control of you. And I'm like you, I find that if I don't have that time for my getting myself together, or as my grandmother would say, get your mind right, that my day is just very chaotic.
Yes. So setting the stage that way early in the morning, you know, followed up by, you know, reviewing, okay, what is on the to-do list today and am I prepared, just makes the day go better.
And, you know,
stress out right nearly as much as I used to.
And I think, you know, going back to where you said earlier about strategic planning, I know that's two opposite ends of the spectrum, but it is kind of the same mindset. That strategic planning is forecasting and seeing what you need and kind of sitting and planning so that things aren't happening to you. Rather, you have a plan in place for how you're going to deal with what comes your way.
Yes, absolutely.
What would you say you're most passionate about?
You know, one of the things I'm most passionate about is making sure that all of our students have access to our school meal program. I've become the director, well, in a sense it was implemented during the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. We're offering supper to most of our students. We're participating in the CACFP program to provide snacks to our early childhood students. We've implemented breakfast in a variety of ways to make sure students, you know, get that first start on the right foot. And that really has been a priority for my program, is making sure that kids have access. And of course, you know, food insecurity is another big topic we see, you know, on the news a lot today. We've this past year implemented a robust food rescue program that allows kids to essentially donate unopened, non-perishable food to us, so that then we give it to Kentucky Harvest, which is a local organization that distributes food to homeless shelters and other organizations. It's our one way to deal with the food waste problem and encourage kids to reduce food waste. We're working on an agreement with Blessings in a Backpack, which is a backpack program for the weekend, so that some of those unopened, non-perishable items that students choose and then they decide not to eat or don't have time to eat can go home in backpacks with students that need support over mm-hmm. the weekend. So, again, that's, to me, expanding access to our programs and addressing the food insecurity that kids face when they're not in school.
I don't think, well, from my personal perspective, I don't think the large majority of people in the United States realize what the school nutrition programs have to offer our children and what a value that program is for our nation's children.
I totally agree. And, you know, I hear many people express this when they're doing interviews. I can remember utilizing the same expression many, many years ago when I did a TV interview when I was manager at the Nutrition Service Center. The programs that we offer to our students are as important as the buses that take them to school and the textbooks and technology that they utilize in school. And that's where our programs need to be. They need to be considered essential to education, part of the school day.
You know, and I think for people who are in leadership in child nutrition, whether they're a veteran leader or they're new coming into the program, having that sense of pride for what they do and help do for the children is so very important, because then they have a greater pride in their program, their staff has a greater pride in it, the kids feel it, the community feels it. And just helping them understand that, you know, I think so many professions nowadays, we spend a lot of times, and you've seen it in the news, looking at the negatives of what any one profession may or may not do, or the perception of what they may or may not do. And I would like for people to think who are in the child nutrition profession that you do make a difference. You are so very important.
Absolutely. Just the other day, I was attending a meeting, and the presenter was sharing the fact that if every student has at least one adult in their life that cares about them and that they look up to, they generally have a greater chance of being successful. And, you know, he talked about, you know, so many students across the country, you know, don't have an adult in their home that supports them or that looks up to them, and that often, and he said this specifically, is the school cafeteria worker or the custodian that is that single person in that child's life that can make a difference in their outcome.
I believe it. You know, I can, so I'm 44. I can still tell you the name of the cafeteria worker who spoke to me every day in elementary school, Miss Krim. And Miss Gathright was the custodian in our elementary school. And because mm-hmm. they both made an effort to speak to me every day, they were a smiling face. I knew that I could count on them to be kind and loving. And I came from a loving home, so it wasn't that I was attention craved, but just for those children who may need that extra attention because maybe they don't come from as good a home life, that is just so invaluable. And I think it is underpraised, definitely, in our communities and our nation today.
Absolutely, yes.
So we've covered a lot of information. Do you have any one last tip or piece of advice or nugget you would like to share with our listeners who maybe are thinking about going into leadership in child nutrition or who've been in there a while and just, you know, need some encouragement to keep plodding along and doing the job?
Yes. This is the most noble profession in the world. I always say I have the greatest job in the world. And even when you encounter rough days or rough situations, when you see the smile on that child's face, you have the opportunity to sit down and have lunch with them. You realize that you're doing something very important, and being a leader in this field is exciting because you're making a difference.
Well, Julia, you have been a wealth of knowledge. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit and chat with us and share some of your experience and your knowledge with us. And I always hope that people can take away at least one positive thing. I think you've left us with a wealth of information to take away. So thank you so much for your time today.
Well, you are most welcome. It is my pleasure.
So, folks, until next time, tune in next month for more iBites. And until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.